Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Charlene Proctor. She is an author. And I think it would be true to say very much into the spiritual development of people, although she has many different facets to her interests. And hopefully we're going to have a very good discussion about the work she puts into the many books that she produces. So welcome to the program, Charlene.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
All right, we're very grateful that you are here. Now, it would seem to me that I'm correct in thinking that the basis for much of your work, if not all of it, is to help people on a spiritual level. But what would be your response to that?
Well, I think that nowadays, you know, spirituality can be defined as a personal search for the meaning of life. And I'm not saying that a lot of people are gravitating away from religion. I'm saying that it's important to make a distinction, you know, between spirituality and religion, which religion is, you know, in my opinion, defined by a set of historically defined beliefs in within an organized community. And I think over the years that I've been giving empowerment workshops and writing books and so forth, that people are just seeking, you know, especially in some of these programs or retreats or wherever people are looking for joy, you know, to have some sort of experience of the divine, to really embrace the idea of the presence more on an experiential level. I think that's what people are searching for, and that's certainly something that I've attempted to convey in this latest book that I've written, The Oneness Gospel.
Yeah, which one was that?
This latest book, The Oneness Gospel.
Oh yes, right.
Yeah, is the newer piece. It's an East meets West piece, which was a little bit different than some of the other books that I'd written, which dealt more with, you know, affirmative thinking and manifestation of a positive reality, and really just helping people be more empowered and feeling happier and more in charge of their lives. But this latest book, it was a real interesting piece for me. I think it tried to look at spirituality from a different angle and to try to convey more of this experiential aspect of the presence, as I said before, which I think nowadays a lot of people are seeking.
I think that's absolutely certain, and I don't know what your view is of the idea of ascension, which is coming shortly, but I would think your book in that case is very timely, because I think a lot of people are searching for reasons and for help. I noticed that you also talk of the Oneness Gospel as birthing the Christ consciousness and divine human in you, and I think that's an interesting idea to merge the Eastern and Western viewpoints. Would you like to say a little bit more on that and how it's affected what you've written? I mean, how do you find they merge together? Is it something that's easy to do?
Well, I tell you, the Oneness Gospel came about really for me when I began to look at these teachings of the oneness movement that were gravitating over from Fiji and India. And I thought it was really interesting and really timely that they were very congruent with some of the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, because these ideas are very simple and interfaith and universal. And they're very unity-oriented, which I think is very timely given this polarized society that we're living in today. And I think getting back to, you know, your first comment about spirituality is people, in my experience, are really moving today so much beyond analysis, and they are looking to experience this thing of what is, to really take on a larger dimension in life and connecting with something that's so far greater than themselves, and really identifying what that is and experiencing their life accordingly. So I suppose overall, if I were to look at the works that I've done, this piece is so much broader. It was definitely more personal to me, more internal. It came from a place where we had, I had experienced some certain circumstances in my life that had produced a lot of suffering, and I was actually looking for a set of teachings or a process that would help alleviate all of that. So I think there's a lot in there for folks to relate to on a personal level.
Right. I personally think that the teachings from India, you know, you refer to them as the oneness teachings, possibly enhance the teachings that we have in the New Testament, for example. Mm-hmm. But can you think of any specific instance where you found the teachings from India to be particularly useful?
Well, as I said, the people that attend, as I did, these processes in India and Fiji, which, by the way, are taught by the Dasas. And a Dasa really is a monk or a holy person that's associated with a set of teachings or a temple out there. And for many, many years, these ideas and teachings were coming from a place called the Oneness University. And given by a couple by the name of Amma Bhagavan, who consider themselves to be one avataric consciousness. I know that sounds like a mouthful, but basically what it means in their culture is their energies and their thoughts and what they are all about are really joined as one consciousness. So, you know, for me to seek these ideas and to bring them back and relate them in some fashion, which is not all about Eastern philosophy, really. It was just, like I said, very interfaith. And many people that go out there and have been, and these are folks from all over the planet, really. They're not just people from the West, but all cultures and economic groups and so forth. Really go out there to experience and learn these things with this particular group because they have an interest really in two things. This is what my experience has shown. Number one, there's some kind of suffering in their lives that has left some sort of emotional charge in the energy layers of their bodies, which basically means that when you experience some sort of emotional trauma, it sort of gets stuck in you. Maybe causing some sort of physical disease or thing that keeps you from experiencing joy in your life and moving forward. And secondly, people go out there to learn these things with this particular group because they absolutely do not know how to manifest the kind of lives that they want. And they're seeking some sort of answer about what their blockages are and what it is that is preventing them from doing so. So I, like the rest of the people that have gone out there over the years, came pretty much with those particular issues. And I thought it was really interesting for me as a self-help writer and as somebody who's been a spiritual teacher for many, many years to have been teaching these concepts to people but unable to put them to work in my own life when I had experienced such suffering. And I needed help in order to move these pieces through. And I'll tell you, it was very enlightening to see the kind of work that was being done out there and how helpful it was to people. I thought it was extraordinary, actually, the things that we had learned, the people that had had spiritual awakenings, which basically are some sort of identification with the one presence that exists everywhere and with all beings. And all when you see people go through this, Michael, it's really it is an incredible viewpoint on humanity and what our relationship is to the greater power that be. It's very healing, and overall, I had a lot of mystical experiences with this group that I did not anticipate, because I basically went out there with no expectation whatsoever for any of that. And of course, for me anyway, that was one of the neat things that I was able to bring forward. So there's parts of the book that talk about that, but basically it's focused on the lessons that we need to address in order for us to deal with those two things, the suffering in our lives and how to overcome that, and secondly, how do we create a life that we really desire?
Right. Yes, I think there's definitely comfort in knowing that we are all one, and whatever we're experiencing personally, you could say we are all in it together. Now, having said what you have, is that why you have another area of focus, which you refer to as spiritual mind treatments? And could you tell us a bit about that?
The nine treatments? What's that? You mean like the 12 principles?
No, one of the main areas I believe that you work in is spiritual mind treatments.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if that related to what we have just been talking about, in other words, help people clear their problems, and whether you could tell us what it means to you.
Well, what I learned about a clearing, which was very interesting and quite a surprise for me, actually, because I had not worked with this thing called the blessing before. Well, actually, now I stand corrected. I did. Before I went out to Fiji in India, I had done a little work and had some experiences with a couple of Indian teachers by the name of Sai Ma Lakshmi Devi. Are you familiar with Sai Ma's work? She's based in Colorado, and she has a very big organization. And the other gal was Amma Amritanandamayi. And both of them are Indian teachers. They're what they would call spiritual masters, because they seem to be more, I don't want to say evolved, but more in touch with being able to give darshan, which is a blessing, which is something that helps clear the mind and the body of residual suffering. And I was really intrigued with this kind of a process, because when you're suffering or you have something going on in your life, as we all do at times because life is full of challenges, and you can't seem to move through those pieces, it seems like if we don't have a true understanding of what grace is, which is really just the holy presence and how we invite that into ourselves, there's no way that your mind is going to be able to move forward so that the rest of you can, because the mind, as you know, is very, very powerful. So I guess part of this, because you talked about mind treatment, to me, I guess from a philosophical standpoint, is largely about surrendering to the process of inviting grace, which is a healing energy, into you. And what I learned through Simon, Amma, Amritanandamayi, and then further with the Dasas, or the monks from the Oneness University, and also Bhagavan and Amma from India, is that this grace or this energy, this intelligent sacred energy, which actually initiates a journey into a higher conscious state of awareness, is so vitally important for us, and that it's so readily available. And we worked with this energy, and we worked with receiving it and using it to help clean ourselves from the inside out, so that we were more receptive to joy and happiness and more opportunity, more abundance, better relationships, and so forth in our lives. And that was kind of a new idea for me because, you know, like most of the people in the West, we want to over-intellectualize everything. I mean, if you go to a self-help bookstore, you know, in Western culture, you're going to go to the self-help section and look at, oh, well, there's 10 steps to better marketing, or there's 15 steps to a happier life. You know, we all seem to be very lineal thinkers here, and we want everything written down in a set of rules that's going to, you know, we can follow to quickly get us on our way to a better world and a better life. And grace is just something that is somewhat nebulous. It's undefinable and definable in a way, and none of us really understand fully how to work with that. And I certainly didn't until I went out there to study with these folks and learn a little bit more and bring it back in the form of the blessing, which is this Diksha. So I suppose if I could recommend any sort of mind treatment for anybody who's struggling with such issues in their life that are blocking them from fully experiencing the present moment, I would ask them to seek the meaning of what the presence really is and what grace is and how the activity of the divine, which is grace, can help and heal you. And to get with people who can help them understand that and to put it to work in their lives.
Yes, indeed. I think what you've said can help a lot of people, in fact. Now, where does the law of attraction come into your work? Because it's something I believe that you use or talk about.
Mm. I wrote a lot about a couple books ago about law of attraction, and basically law of attraction is like attracts like. It's an important idea, it's an important concept for all of us. It's the concept of conscious creation. First of all, we are in a relationship with the divine, and whomever your image of divinity is, whatever your wisdom tradition, it really doesn't matter. But to have some sort of relationship or idea with the divine, to say that life is a conscious co-creation. In other words, we're constantly co-creating our own reality, right? We're doing it with ourselves and our minds, our hearts, all of our intentions, our energy output that we have as human beings. But there's this force out there that works as our partner. And that's kind of one of the fundamental assumptions, in my opinion, of the law of attraction. And the second is that, as I said before, like attracts like. So the more that we hold in our minds of something that we intend to do or want, the more we are going to vibrate with this particular trait to a certain idea. So it's kind of like, I kind of think of it as a vibratory process. I know that sounds really woo-woo, but you know, we're all just anchored in energy. We are all vibrating beings. And when we want to understand that all form is thought, for example, when we project a lower vibration and a lower state of consciousness, you're going to create discord and negativity because it's distorted, right? If you want to emanate the ideas of hate or exploitation or separation or selfishness or spite or anger, those thoughts are very, very sticky. And a higher consciousness that you might want to attract in your life and for better ideas, higher consciousness is being aware of God. It's love, right? It's constructive. It's non-resistant. It acts creatively, and it's all about living in the flow. So the premise of the law of attraction is, if you want to live your life and live in the flow and being in a state of higher conscious awareness of you being an individualized spark of divine creation, then you're going to focus on positive ideas and constructive ideas and ideas that are non-resistant and creative, and that's what will be attracted to you in your life. And by the same token, because all form is thought, if you choose to project a lower vibration and a lower state of consciousness, you're going to create a lot of negative circumstances. So it takes people, I think, a lot of time and self-discipline to say, oh, well, I want to change something in my life. Well, it means that you can't just sit around and pray for it and ask for it and make a lot of lists in the back of a self-help book. You virtually need to vibrate with the idea of that thing you want or who you want to be or what you want attracted in your life. And that takes a little bit of work. It takes, like I said, self-discipline. So I have taught people a lot about that over the years. If I might just close my thought by saying that I remember there was a guy who was a 1940s New Thought minister. I don't know if you remember him. His name was Emmett Fox. Did you ever read any of his stuff, Emmett Fox?
Michael? I must be honest and say I can't recall anything by name, no.
Yeah. He is a really interesting guy, and he wrote a little bit about the law of attraction and what you need to consciously create something in your life. And his stuff was really interesting. It's probably way beyond his time, and he preached a very unity and interfaith message. And what he said was that in order to make anything attracted to you or to make anything happen in your life, you need two things. You need clarity and you need passion. Well, clarity is about knowing what you want. I mean, you really, if you want to attract something in your life, you kind of have to have a pretty clear idea of what it is. There's an old saying in our house that goes something like this: if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, which basically means that, you know, if you really don't know where you're going and you're just kind of wandering around, you're going to get exactly what you are in, which is wandering around, and you're never going to find what you want because you don't have a clear idea of what it is. So you kind of need to crystallize some of that in your head. And that's one thing, that one principle that Emmett Fox was always preaching. The other thing was passion. And passion is the energy output, the feeling that you have when you actually are experiencing this thing that you want. So say I want to be a kajillionaire and have $2 million and live a very abundant life. Well, if I don't have some sort of plan, I suppose, for getting it, which is the clarity, but if I don't couple that with the feeling of what it is like to live a life of total abundance, I will never receive that situation. So I had better darn well spend some time, if I want to be such an abundant character in life, sitting and thinking about and feeling what it is like to experience such a thing. Because again, as I said before, this whole thing about vibrating at the level of what it is you want, if you want to attract a lot of abundance or money in your life, then you'd better vibrate at the level of one who is abundant. If you don't, none of that will ever, ever be attracted to you.
Right.
So that's my little lecture on the law of attraction.
that's a very good explanation indeed. You're saying you are what you think, really.
Mm-hmm. But remember what Emmett said. He's not just about what you think, it's what you feel. And it's what you are vibrating.
Yes, So
you know when you go to church and they make you sing the song, Peace Begins With Me. You know, I am peace and peace begins with me. Well, the whole idea behind that is that if you want peace in the world, then you had better vibrate at the level of peace yourself, because you won't be able to change anything or anybody or anyone in the world or any world circumstances, and certainly not your own personal life, to be more peaceful if you are not in a state of vibration with the idea of peace. So that alone is a very, very rich idea. And I love that you asked this question, because if there's anything you could teach people today, is to absolutely think about this idea and to contemplate on it and say, you know, my life isn't going so well right now, and here's what I want and here's what I need. But I have to be that idea. I have to have clarity on it. I have to have passion, and I have to vibrate at the level of consciousness that this idea resides in. So I guess we could put that principle to work for just about anything.
Yes, indeed. Now, I know that you like affirmations. I won't ask you for one on that particular subject, but I did read that you said, this is following on what we've just been talking about, that with a little discipline, self-love, and mindfulness, we can easily broadcast our intentions to the universe, which is what you're saying. Now, it might be interesting to amplify what you mean by self-love and how that fits in.
Well, first of all, an affirmation is a positive present day statement, right? And I just want to clarify for people who may not know what that is. What was it you said about self-love? What is self-love?
Well, how does it fit in with the sentence that I read out, which is quoting you, that with a little discipline, self-love, and mindfulness, we can easily broadcast our intentions to the universe?
Well, self-love, to me, there's a predecessor to self-love, and that, and authenticity, actually is one of the spiritual lessons that I wrote about in the book, which is basically learning to be at ease with yourself. I think a lot of folks have trouble with that. We don't really know ourselves. We're not forgiving of ourselves. We see ourselves through a lot of conditioning and programming, which is the antithesis of what an affirmation is. Authenticity lays the groundwork for self-love. If we don't really know ourselves, how are we supposed to love ourselves? And if we want to change something in our immediate environment or in the universe, we can't do that unless we love ourselves first. We can run around and love everybody else and talk about that all darn day long, but until we go inside and internal to understand who we are, to be at ease with ourselves and be authentic and lay that groundwork for self-love, we can't love anybody else. I just don't think that's possible. I think that my basic take on your comment is that if we really want to change our circumstances, the first place we have to look is really deep inside and to take care of business inside our own hearts first. So I think that's probably what I meant about the self-love piece, is that that has to come first before anything else. I don't know how anybody can love another person. I actually don't think it's possible, and produce any kind of positive change in their lives until they learn to love themselves first. I think it's impossible. I think people today are more into that. I think they're recognizing that that's an important piece for them, and that's certainly one of the things they talked about at the Oneness Camp when I was there in India.
Right. Now, you tell us that the monks that you were with emphasized the use of positive language. Now, that's an interesting point. I've very rarely read anyone pick up on that particular point. So what is it that people do that say negative in their language, and what should they be doing instead?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that these monks are pretty funny people. right. They actually are. They're hysterical. They are very consciously aware of everything that they say. They're funny. They're interesting. They're beautiful, beautiful, soft, informed, and delightful people. The best teachers, you know, that I have ever experienced in the spiritual world, from any group at all. And we used to watch them go through all of the same kind of confrontations and emotions that the rest of us were going through. They would get angry and get positional. But the difference between them and us, because they had more discipline and were more familiar with the use of auspicious language, is that they would recognize this right away. They would know immediately when they were angry or positional and be constantly, you know, trying to be kind about it. Oh, you know, one would say to the other, I'm so sorry I'm being positional, but I'm very angry at you today. and they would be so consciously aware of what was going on inside and their differences of opinions with each other, because even at holy people or dasas or monks or whoever in a religious order, they're not exempt from the same emotions and the same challenges and the same feelings that the rest of us have. They just recognize it and know how to process it faster and more efficiently. So one of the things we learned by not only watching them, but one of the things that they had us practice and really preached as a message to take home and put to work in our own lives was this use of auspicious language and not allowing your thoughts and words to turn into negative stories and illusions. And I'll tell you, you know, it sounds really simple. And didn't your mom always used to say, well, if you can't say something nice about somebody, don't say anything at all. Remember that one? I know my mother said that.
Right,
but this thing about what we talked about a couple minutes ago about vibrations and how thought is form and how everything has a vibration that will attract or not attract, or, you know, attract or repel something in your life. So a word or something that you are putting forth from the very center of your being, speech, has a lot of power. And when we're constantly slamming people and talking negative and listening to some of these movie soundtracks, my gosh, I can't tell you. Some of these movies and TV shows, I just, you know, I'm a contemporary woman, all right? But I can't even listen to this stuff. That the language is so perverse and negative and in the gutter. And all of those words, the Dasa say, carry a negative charge. And what we're doing is we're just recycling it back and forth, and it serves no one any purpose. So it's another discipline for us to be very, very aware of what our language is and to be speaking positive and constructive language. And I'll tell you can disagree with somebody, you can have a constructive argument, a difference of opinion or whatever, but you can still use auspicious and constructive language. And it's been really interesting when I started to be more consciously aware of speech with myself and with other people. When you're focusing on the way that you're expressing and consciously aware of what you're saying and to keep it as positive as possible, you are attracting so much better things and better vibrations, because speech is so very, very powerful. And I think it's important, especially, and I got to tell you, and it's a shocker to me still, this internet culture. Oh my gosh. The people on these chat rooms and people that are visiting your blogs and stuff, and the anger and the emotional charges that are negative, that are attached to the words, I wonder what those people, what their personal lives are, because when you're constantly putting forth that kind of vibration and energy, you know, it all comes back to you. It's like a big boomerang. Mm. So this use of auspicious language was a very big deal for the monks, and they demonstrated it beautifully. And it was a real eye-opener for me, to say the least. I cleaned up my act really so much better after I came back from India.
Right. I think possibly sometimes, as hard as we try to be positive in our thinking, and in that case our speech, we are perhaps a bit upset when someone doesn't work to the same principles. So when you talk of, as you did a few minutes ago, about forgiving, are we to believe that anything that is done against us, even if it's harmful, should be immediately forgiven?
Well, the greatest spiritual masters have been attempting to demonstrate to us over the millennium that it is possible to forgive anything. And we still don't get it because, you know, I believe that it's possible to be forgiven and to forgive anyone for anything. I mean, if we weren't capable of forgiveness, I think the human race would have expired, you know, 10,000 years ago. It's just, we're designed to forgive. And it's one of the toughest things. That's why everybody doesn't do it. And it's a very hard lesson in love, and it's one of the toughest things we have to learn while we're here in this human experience. But yes, I do believe it is possible to forgive for anything. And there's everyday people. I mean, we don't need to look to the Buddha or Jesus or any of the other spiritual masters you may have read about or encountered in your own personal life as an example of this, but your own family and the person down the street who's giving you your dry cleaning and the people that you meet at work every day. I mean, there's an opportunity for us to go beyond the basic premise of loving somebody, and that's loving somebody who's done you harm and who doesn't love you, which is even harder to do because we're not getting anything back, right? I mean, that's the way we perceive it. So yes, my answer is I think it's possible. Yes, we need to work towards that idea. I think it's important. I think there's great freedom in getting to a place like that. I think it's inspirational for people. I mean, I've certainly been inspired by stories of everyday people in my own life or people I've read about in the newspaper who have overcome tremendous odds in their lives of people who have done them wrong and have still found forgiveness. So maybe some folks would say that it's a choice. I think it's a necessity in order for us to create a better world and to inspire others to, you know, participate to their in life to the highest of their ability.
Yes, indeed. I agree with you there. Now, let's take, for example, as often happens in very close relationships, there is a breakup and it becomes very nasty, and perhaps in the end, both people have a degree of hate for each other. Now, if one of them can find it in their heart to forgive, would it be correct to assume that by sending out that energy, you're also helping the other person?
What, we're helping the other person by forgiving them? I guess I don't understand.
Right.
In a relationship,
so,
that
it's a plus then, really, because what you do for yourself in that case also helps the other person, and I suppose it's feasible that in time you can actually remove the negativity that exists.
No, I absolutely believe that. I mean, the whole concept of oneness. Hello, are you there? Yeah, Michael?
Oh, we've lost you, or lost
Uh-oh.
Me.
Oh, no.
Let's see, who's lost who? Oh.
Hello. Michael, are you there?
Charlene's gone.
No. Okay, well, I'm still here.
PBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth.
Right, Charlene, we have had a little hiccup there. I don't know how that occurred, but I was in the course, I thought. Anyway, I don't know whether you heard me start to ask you a question still on the subject of people that might have a very volatile relationship, mm-hmm. and the point that if one of them can be forgiving, that energy also helps the other person.
Absolutely. It helps everyone. I guess if we look at oneness and this shared space that we have together, because essentially one, and oneness is being completely aware of God within yourself. It's got nothing to do with everybody being unified under one set of traditions or one set of beliefs or one particular religion or way of thinking or whatever. That's utterly ridiculous. I mean, the beauty and the magnificence of our existence is our diversity. So if we understand that there really is no separation between any of us, and that oneness is being completely aware of God within yourself, and once we are, I guess one would ask, well, what would God do? Isn't the purpose of God, or however we would define that in our own wisdom traditions, to be forgiving? I mean, nobody could be left behind for anything. There is no such thing of not being in the all that is. There's no such thing when you really think about it, right? Because where would you be? You can't be outside of everything. So my point is that, you know, whatever we're feeling and whatever we're experiencing is shared with the next person who's sharing it with the next person and the next person and so on. So if we know that we are all one, and that whatever we're feeling and experiencing, and hopefully something good like love and forgiveness, is going to uplift everything and everybody, because we're raising the collective vibration. That's actually an interesting question, because it deals with this concept of mass enlightenment, which is actually based on the natural law. And I don't know if you know this thing about the 100th monkey phenomenon. Have you read anything about this? Because I would really like to share this. Okay, the law of entrainment. And yeah, it's really neat. And the idea is, and it absolutely has to do with this subject that you brought out about, does forgiveness help another person? Okay. It's the idea that when you have a certain number of people that are holding a higher state of consciousness, and that's called a critical mass, a mass consciousness automatically comes into resonance with it. That is the concept of mass enlightenment. And there's this guy, he was a biologist. His name was Rupert Sheldrake. And he invented this term called the morphogenetic field. And what it means is it's a field of consciousness that's specific to a given species. So the more members of a species that exhibit a certain trait or they vibrate to a certain consciousness, the easier it becomes for all the other members of that species to entrain with that trait of consciousness. So in English, what this means is that there was a story about a bunch of monkeys, I guess, that were on an island, and one of them was learning how to crack a coconut or a nut or something a certain way. And the more people, the more monkeys that did this particular task, then all of a sudden the entire species of monkeys was able to entrain to this idea and to adapt to it and understand it and do it. So I guess what that story means to me with relationship to your comments about forgiveness is that the more that each of us as individuals are in within ourselves and within our relationships or in our small communities, our families perhaps, practice something like the idea of forgiveness when it really doesn't seem to make any sense or might feel easier not to forgive another person, the more people that do it, what will happen is this whole idea of the mass awakening or the mass enlightenment, where everybody gets the idea all together and begins to practice it. So my greater point is, however hard you think it is to do something like forgiving another person or to loving a person that you maybe are not so easy to love, the more you practice it, the more that you are helping to uplift every other person on the planet achieve that same particular thing. The person in, you know, Croatia or, you know, France or at some island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean is going to have an easier time with something or some circumstance because you alone have chosen to raise your vibration to help the uplifting of mass consciousness. And that is what the concept of oneness is also about. So I guess we don't need to look at these pieces in our lives as such tiny little things, you know, about people who have done wrong to us and or have ticked us off or stolen something from us or done us harm. You know, the more we can look at it as a really big picture item and to know that whatever we're doing is helping facilitate the uplifting of humanity as a whole, that's when your work becomes truly significant and important. And that just begins right within your own heart.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And I think in this present time on the earth, as we're seeing with the worldwide demonstrations, we're seeing something of that nature in as much that people are suddenly waking up to the fact that they've been having their rights and their sovereignty taken away from them, and now there is this big demand to get it back. So are you still there?
I'm still there.
You were so taken back with what I said, you couldn't speak for a minute there. Now, look, we've spoken quite a lot about your latest book. Yeah. Is there anything you would like to say about some of your others? Because I notice you have a very special one here, The Woman's Book of Empowerment. So go ahead.
That was a lovely book. I wrote it as a consequence of having done a lot of research about the goddess and why women have all the tools, well, at least in Western culture, to be empowered but still feel like they aren't. And what are the things that hold them back? And what value does it serve, if any, to have a female image of divinity? And what it was like in the old days when cultures had that as part of their philosophy. And so that was one of the ideas behind Let Your Goddess Grow. It was very interesting to me to research that book. I loved it, and women are still reading it. It's it's available as an ebook and in paperback still, and it was very interesting to research the history of ancient cultures and the goddess and what ideas are still relevant today that women can use to help empower themselves and to be a force of society, that they were in the old days. So that was a really very interesting book. And then I wrote a companion book to that called The Woman's Book of Empowerment, which was a collection of affirmations that would help a person change their thinking when they got off on the wrong track. So I always told people when they bought this book to keep it in their car, because if they were stuck at a traffic light and using non-auspicious language to the person in the vehicle next to them, that they could look it up and look up something positive in the book and to set the energy in the right place so they wouldn't sink down into a field of negativity. So, but the new book, The Oneness Gospel, is definitely more broader. It's definitely for men and women. And the people that have read it it's been very well received. It's a beautiful book and I think very well researched. So I hope your listeners would take a look at it and let us know what they think. Write to us in our email box or Facebook us and get in our conversations about the book.
Right. Now, we are rapidly getting near to the end of the program, and I know you have a very interesting website, and you offer quite a lot to people who want to use it. I believe it's correct to say you have a free newsletter that people can subscribe to, and you have free audio and video samples, articles, and
yes,
so forth.
Yes, our website, we have a couple websites. The first is charlaineproctor.com, and if they want to just learn about the Oneness Gospel and see our book trailer, which, by the way, is fabulous, they can go to theonenessgospel.com. Now, earlier this year, I did a series of television shows for a cable network here in the States for Xfinity, which used to be Comcast. And the series was called Your Journey to Joy. And the series ran for 6 months on television. But these shows are all on our website. And I would encourage people to go to our homepage and to look these up. They're all on the website, and they are just lovely. Little programs that will teach them about all of these principles that we've been talking about today, conscious creation and authenticity and self-love and all these things that we've spent this last wonderful hour talking about in the form of a little lecture TV show. So I do hope that people will take a look and, again, write to us or email us if they have any problems navigating. And if they do, we'll get them on the right track.
Right, fine. When you were talking about, I believe, these programs on your web, are those the ones you refer to as the eight shows?
The eight shows. Maybe those were. I think there were about eight of those. Your Journey to Joy. That must have. Yeah, those were the shows that we did earlier this year.
Right.
Yeah, I hope you take a listen in on those, because they were beautifully produced. And we're very well received.
And I believe you also have a few of your own articles on your website that people can read.
Yeah, we have newsletters and articles and our blog and our Facebook page. Of course, now everyone communicates with Twitter and Facebook, which is quite a bit different than it was three or four books ago. But, heck, that's our culture right now is people like to follow on Twitter. So I would encourage them to do that with us. We always have wonderful shows, and this show is no exception. We will be posting it on our blog and Twittering and Facebooking people so they can listen in to all of our ideas and stay in touch with us.
Right. And are you still doing sort of a special work on formerly homeless or victims of domestic violence? Is that still something you're interested in?
Well, we did a project a number of years ago for this organization called Lighthouse Path, which is a shelter for homeless women who had children. And it's a very interesting, it was a very interesting project, because what we did was we took the lessons from Let Your Goddess Grow, and I developed them into a live program. And the women who are basically homeless, they're coming from domestic violence scenarios. Many of them had been without a high school education, and here they were with dependent children upon them with no job, no money, and nothing, homeless. And the purpose of their organization was to get these people to be economically independent, which I thought was very, very interesting. They weren't just there to give them a pat on the back and a knapsack full of supplies. They actually educated these women to learn how to be able to take care of themselves and their kids so they could get out of there. So my job was to teach them how to think positive and to talk to them about affirmations and affirmative thinking and how to control their thoughts and understand the relationship to the divine presence and so forth. And I spent 6 months with these ladies. And I'll tell you, these women were the best students I have ever had. If they can learn how to think positive with their circumstances, anybody can. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely inspiring, and we learned a lot from each other, and I was very honored that they had looked to me as a spiritual teacher and as somebody who could help them just get past the tough parts so that they had a new image of themselves and a new way to view the world when they left this facility.
Right. Now, I noticed one of the headings on your website refers to health. Is that something you're personally involved in?
Well, I'd probably say spiritual and mental health.
Right.
And certainly, you know, I'm a dancer too, so I'm interested in physical health, but, you know, I just go out and do my thing. I'm a ballroom dancer. I don't know if you knew that.
Right.
So I guess to the extent I'm interested in healthy dancing, I would say that's one of my things. But
right.
Yeah, mostly you're right.
You're obviously bearing in mind that we can't take our physical body with us, so it doesn't matter too much.
Oh, no. I can't. Well, you caught me on that one. It's true. We're really not the body, but as long as we're here, we can enjoy it. So
absolutely, yes, yes.
And then to take care of ourselves, because it is our vehicle for our spirit. So we do need to take care of ourselves, yes.
Right. What would you say about, say, people who are very rigid in their beliefs and, say, follow a specific religion and aren't open to any other forms of spirituality or suggestions? Do you think this is a time now for people to sort of open up a bit?
I do. I think that they need to focus on this fundamental principle of harmony, which governs all things and to which a person can relate to. It would be fairly arrogant, though, of me to say that this is something that they absolutely need to learn, because you got to remember that each of us are exactly where we're supposed to be in our developmental processes, spiritually and emotionally and karmically. So I know that is a tough thing to say when it comes to acceptance, is that all of us are probably exactly where we need to be, because the world seems so rough and discouraging at times. But if we weren't here to learn something from all of the strife, then I don't really think we would be here in the first place. I mean, we might as well just stay on the other side and enjoy paradise. And we're here for a reason. There's a whole matrix of opportunity and possibility for personal and spiritual transformative growth by all of these things. And certainly the people who feel safe, perhaps, by being contained in some structured, organized religion that refuses to, you know, look outside of that as anything that's valid. You know, many of us who have broken through that particular idea, you know, we have to be careful not to judge. They're probably exactly where they need to be, and we're where we need to be, and if we can find some space in between, then more power to all of us. But, you know, my personal attitude on all of it is to just keep broadening ourselves, no matter what. Broaden, broaden, broaden. Look beyond, challenge yourself, and always be willing to learn something new about something or someone, because that's how we grow, right?
Yes, indeed. And I notice you mentioned karma there. Do you think that has a big place in our life?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons we're here. We have relationships and energies left over from past lives. Hopefully we're not here creating any new karma, which is, you know, many may describe that as the law of retribution. But I prefer to look at it as an energetic relationship we have to something, somebody, or some circumstances that needs to be balanced. And I think we come in with some relationships like that. We are with people in our lives. We have no idea why, or there's some sort of undone business there. And all of that needs to be set right. And when we take a bigger viewpoint of it, and that knowing that this is a task that we're all faced with at some point in our lives, I think the task becomes a lot easier. You know, it's hard enough as it is, but when we look at the big picture and say, you know, there's something here that needs to be set right, something that needs to be balanced, we're all going to grow together better.
Yes, I agree. And the fact that we've got infinite life means that if we feel we've made a real mess of this one, I think we can sort of hope that we can put that right and have a better life in the future.
I totally agree with you, because who are we to think that we only get the one shot to learn everything we're supposed to learn? I mean, it's virtually impossible. It'd be like showing up for kindergarten and saying, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, in 1 year get through my doctoral program. It's just, it's impossible for us to learn everything that we need and want to in one round. I don't think that that's possible. I think it takes us many times to get it right. And that's the cyclical and evolutionary nature of the universe, in my opinion. So we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves. You know, we should just know that it takes time, and we're all really where we need to be.
Yes, and I think knowing that also helps people that perhaps feel that they're in such an awful position that they sometimes think of committing suicide. I would like to think that if they realise that life goes on and things can be put right, they wouldn't perhaps feel so deeply upset or in that type of emotional condition.
Yeah, that's suicides are particularly disheartening to me. There's so much sadness. I mean, we've certainly had them in our own family, friends, people we know have taken that alternative path, and it's very sad. you're actually, and I don't want to end the show on a depressing or negative nature, but suicide is about murdering yourself. So to me, you're creating a karmic relationship with yourself. I mean, it would be one thing to have it with another person, but to do that to oneself is a whole complicated thing. And I think that given the amount of people that have active communication with the other side, we've heard quite a bit over the years about people who have committed suicide who have regretted it the minute that they've done it, because there's some relationship that they have with themselves they have to set right. They have to come back and repeat their life and repeat those same lessons again, which is probably a fairly large task. So anyway, that's a subject for another day.
Yes, and I think to add my comment to that, I can't really believe that people come into life with a life plan that is meant to end in that way. So I can understand your comment in saying you're likely to have to come back and relive that life and, of course, seek the correct outcome that you probably planned. So I think, again, as I've said, knowing that you have infinite life perhaps can help people who feel that way. Now, is there anything within your great interests and the work you do that I haven't touched upon that you would like to mention or talk about?
Well, I guess at this point, I'm just speaking about the book and taking a rest, getting ready to write something else probably after the first of the year. And so that's kind of where I am professionally. But, personally and as a teacher, I would just encourage people to just see themselves as a reflection of spirit. The more that we can do that, the more we can help others do that, we're all just going to find so much more joy and be peaceful. So that's my thought I would wish to conclude with is that.
Well, that's very, very nice indeed. And I think we will finish the program here. So I have to thank you very much for coming on, Charlene. It's been very interesting. And as I inevitably find, when you have an interesting conversation, the time just speeds by. You don't know where it's gone. So thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, all the best to you. All right, friends, next week my guest will be Carol Corey. She has been on before, but you could say it might be a little bit of light relief from some of the heavier subjects we cover. She's a successful author who's written about the power of honey, vinegar, olive oil and chocolate. And now she's just written a book about the healing powers of coffee, and that's what we'll be discussing. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.